Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And James Kovacic. Welcome, everyone, for joining us on this new episode.
Yeah, James, you know, we were just talking about, well, for me, it was a bit of frustration. I had a webinar didn't quite work, and there was a change in a default setting for the audio system. And you had mentioned some trouble with some audio setup you had. And I think, if what was the underlying cause you found out after 4 hours on the phone?
So what I've come to find out is it's a hardware compatibility issue from the microphone I've been using for the last 100 plus episodes is no longer compatible with Windows 10. So I lost the ability to do the microphone boost and some of the enhancements on the microphone tab as a result of that change.
Oh, man. And I'm sure you got a personalized letter from the Microsoft folks saying that this change would affect you.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I went through about three or four different techs over the course of 4 hours trying, you know, reinstall drivers, try this, try that, all the same things I did. And then finally, once like, it's a hardware issue. We've had hardware issues with certain recording devices as a result of the changes to Windows 10.
Oh, wow.
So in order to get the microphone back up to where I want it to be and performing how I want it to be, I have to go buy a mixer and some cables and a learning and quite a bit of learning to get that all to work and set it up properly so I can get back to where I originally was.
Wow. Well, at least your microphone sounds pretty good as it sounds right now in this recording. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that Microsoft doesn't do an update while we're recording. Well, let's take a quick break because I want to, before we dive into this a little bit more and tie it into the world of work that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, let's pause for just a second.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett of Apex Ridge Reliability. Apex Ridge Reliability is an engineering consulting service that advances your product development with reliability tools, methods, cultural practices, and education to ensure you create mature and reliable products. To learn more, go to ascendoreliability.com/go/apex.
All right. You know, James, change happens, right? You would think a microphone would just keep working with whatever software system we're doing in it, but that implies, or we're making the assumption that they would do backward compatibility and they would continue to support all of the systems they've supported over the years. You know, I don't know of any audio system today, unless you buy one specifically to do it, that will load cassette tapes. You know, one's on the market, right? They're just not supporting it. It's not built in. And I'm quite sure that if you hooked up a tape recorder as an input, it would have trouble figuring out exactly what it was and what to do with it.
Oh, absolutely. Change is constant. And, you know, we do have to make updates to systems, to hardware, to all these different things to make sure that, you know, stuff's operating the way it should. It's reliable for security concerns, all those different things. But, you know, this doesn't just happen with computers and microphones. I see this happen with PLCs. I see this happen with variable frequency drives and all these other components. Mm-hmm. A lot of them don't have backwards compatibility.
That's right. And I remember in the plant I worked at is they were very, very reluctant to update equipment software, the patches that would come through. Unless they were having a problem, they would not update it. And it wasn't like everything was connected to the internet and it was security issues. It was just the PLCs and the controllers for the heating zones and things like that. Every now and then we'd get a patch. And the maintenance guys were like, nope, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, if that patch is for something that we needed improved, then let's test it. because they invariably add other patches and other things they fixed for other customers. In that world, it worked just fine. But when we're talking about stuff that's all interconnected and it's all through Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or other different protocols, we do have to be more worried about security concerns and so on. Yet a very simple little change, like I experienced with, they changed their default setting from don't play hold music to play hold music, destroyed the webinar, and we ended up canceling it or postponing it to a week later. And, you know, if they told me, I certainly didn't see it. I would have been all over that.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of frustrating how many patches and updates that you get now. I'm almost tempted to believe that once upon a time, before the internet was so widespread, before everything was connected, things were tested a lot better because they didn't have the ability to do those updates and changes after it went out to the market as easily.
I doubt it. I doubt it. There's still the pressure to get to market. There's still the pressure to get to revenue. I don't think there's ever been enough time to really vet and test things. The cost of fixing something was more difficult, but that might be an interesting study to just go look at the recall rates, say for vehicles, which is in some public databases or medical devices. I'd be curious. I would say that it hasn't changed. I think our systems are getting more complex, but I don't think that we did anything particularly better or different 20 years ago than we do today.
I'll tell you why I come to this assumption, and maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong. But I enjoy the odd video game from time to time. Mm-hmm. And before, you would pay $60 or $70, you'd go buy the game, you'd put it in your Xbox or whatever the case was, and you could play it, and that was it. You never had to worry about an update or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Now, when you buy a new one, you put it in, before it's even a day old, there's already patches and updates to it. So you can't even play it when you put it in. You got to download the updates. And then almost every day or every week for the next 6 months, there's an update every time you want to play it.
Oh, wow. That's pretty bad.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. Maybe we did a little bit better testing back then because it wasn't as easy just to push a patch or an update. Or if we're just able to find issues so much easier now that we can feed them back and get those updates made. I don't know what changed, but it just seems like there's constant updates.
Yeah. You know, I don't remember
seeing that before.
Yeah. I remember in the days of the Microsoft or the Intel 286 or the 286 machines is one of the real first desktops that we got to use at work pretty regularly. Every Tuesday morning, we were all down for the day while it rebooted four times. prior to that, before we got internet, before we got connected to the web, we would get disks. They would send us a disk once a month or once a year and stuff like that. But there were bugs and workarounds. And I remember the first computers I had getting into the assembly code to fix things myself, because there was just, it just, I had a, my computer would not print to senders, which is the letters J and Y and the other letters that go below the line, as they're called. They're called the senders. It wouldn't print them. So I ended up going into the assembly code and the drivers for those things and rewriting it so it would actually do another pass and add all the descenders on it. And it was, who in their right mind is going to send this thing out where these characters are shifted up and they think that's okay? I'm like, it's, come on. And just loads of stuff like that. Oh, it's going to be in the next version of this. It was more of a version control. But when I was in the factory, we just didn't install those unless it was because it did two things. One, it broke anything custom that we had if you reinstall the firmware behind the equipment. And two is you didn't really know what it would do. It is often that we introduce as many more bugs as the old ones. And I think what you're seeing with the number of updates and patches is that part of it is performance. Part of it, though, I think is the security issues, which there are exceedingly creative people finding ways to hack into these systems. And so there, it, that's an ongoing battle.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But one of the things that I find with these updates and these changes, and you see it, you know, with technology, you see it with equipment redesigns or preventative maintenance program changes, is these changes are identified and they're oftentimes they're implemented without any risk analysis or understanding what is the impact on related equipment, on the process, you know, on a lot of things. There isn't that risk review or change management going on behind it, which introduces a whole lot more risk, introduces a whole lot of potentially more issues.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the worst example I saw was in some train control equipment for a transit system. And there was a separate engineering team that was designing and rolling out new train control systems, the software and the hardware that actually did the train monitoring and control of what train was on which track, basically. And think of it as like a telephone switchboard, not switchboard, communications cabinet with, you know, gazillion wires all interconnected and all these relays and circuit boards and all this stuff. And it's just a maze of wires. And so when something would not work, the train operators or the train dispatchers would call maintenance folks and they would run out, you know, go do troubleshooting and swap out a faulty board or troubleshoot some wires or connectors. There was a bunch of stuff they could do. But when I was with them on a call and they went to this spot and they go, the cabinet's all been opened up and all the wires are disconnected. You know, this doesn't look like anything like it should be doing. Oh, wait a sec. I remember the engineering team were redesigning and rebuilding this thing, but they never tell us where or what systems they're working on, which ones are on version A and which are on version B and so on. And so it took much, much longer to get that section of track back online, because they didn't even know what system it was using at the location.
Yeah. And that all goes back to the management of change process that needs to be taking place, right?
Yeah.
If we're updating a system, how do we communicate that? How do we update drawings? How do we do the risk assessment so we know what risk those changes can cause within the process, the system, the organization?
Yeah. You know, and it's hard to know where you draw that line because, you know, the train control system, I fully agree with you. That should have been well executed. And it's not like it wasn't the first time they've done it. It should, and they've had these issues. There was a management problem just to execute and communicate with each other within their own organization. But you mentioned PLCs earlier. And if somebody does, we have a patch, we need to update the PLC so it fixes a couple of bugs, you know, it could take your line down if that fix actually breaks the way you use that particular system. And you only have to learn that the hard way a couple of times before you just are shy of ever updating again, which presents different sets of risks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think what I'm getting at is there needs to be some sort of management of change in place, regardless of the change. To what extent and to what detail does that go into, I think will vary based upon the complexity or the type of change that's taking place. For example, if we're going to make a change to a preventative maintenance routine and extend the interval, say, from 30 days to 60 days for this on-condition inspection,
right?
That could be a very simple risk analysis with, you know, the CBM technician, the maintenance manager, and, you know, reliability engineer, and they do a quick risk assessment, answer a couple questions. Yep, we're good. We're covered. Not a big deal. Move on.
Yeah.
But if we're completely removing an inspection point or if we're redesigning the equipment, those I think are different and we need to go a little bit more rigorous. If we're doing redesign, well, now we got to get health and safety involved to make sure we're not introducing any potential risks there. Mm-hmm. What's the potential impact on the product? So we may want quality involved to do a little review and so on and so forth. But I think those types of things need to be taking place for any sort of change within the organization.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've seen it in the product design world where a vendor will move their line to a different building or change the formula. And they go, well, it's such a minor change. It didn't even cross our minds that it would impact you. And then at my end of the system, it shuts our product line down because the change had a huge impact. But the vendors, the people creating these systems, or even designers bringing in equipment, unless they're well-schooled in how the equipment's used, how we operate the systems, how it's incorporated with other parts of our program, it's hard to know what assumptions are worth considering and which ones are devastating. And I've run into that over and over and over again. Well, we're just changing the ink color from blue to red. And lo and behold, half our operators are colorblind to red. And now they can't distinguish between two different cables and,
barcode reader doesn't read it anymore.
Yeah, right. And we're like, how did we not anticipate this? I think we get caught with those all the time. I agree with you on complex systems when it's going to cost you millions of dollars or it's a safety problem or something. I think we're good at doing due diligence in most of those circumstances. At least I hope so. In most places I've been, I've seen that done well. It's those little niggly ones, like they change a default setting and now it's broken. And it's a it doesn't give you an error code that makes any sense, kind of thing. Alluding to your problem with the microphones in the Windows 10 update. It's a sliding scale. And if we do due diligence on even spend an extra 5 or 10 minutes checking the assumptions, I think that can help. But I agree that we can't spend 2 weeks doing failure modes and effects analysis on any potential change we want to execute. Yet we can't just solve the local problem and make a quick change without at least stepping back and considering the impacts. What assumptions are we making? And let's vet those to some extent. And I agree with you, James, is that even if it's just a couple of minutes and bounce it off or 2-3 other people that are knowledgeable about the system and how it's used, we can at least prevent some of these smaller ones from becoming big problems.
Oh, absolutely. And it doesn't require a lot of effort. Like you said, it could be 2-3 people. You have a standard list of 5 questions you go through as a group. Yes, no, move on. You're done. Mm-hmm. But at least you've asked the questions, you thought about it. And as long as it's not a tick the box exercise, then it will add value.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things I don't see in change management programs a lot is, well, I see them devolve into check the box things, right? We do it routinely. Here's our standard questions. We ask these specific things and I was in one organization, I would get 8 or 9 change orders per day on various designs and various updates and so on. And many of them, the person submitting the change didn't even put enough background information for us to know what it was about even. So I would just deny them on principle. If I didn't understand it, I denied it. And usually cause a lot of phone calls and more backup and everything else, which I think is prudent. But I think a lot of people just, this is routine, no problem, check it off, no problem. And then, 6 months later, we run into an issue when the production's line's down.
But I think it goes back to, I remember listening to one of your podcasts, and it was around the same sort of thing with doing HALT or HAS tests on every single product that's coming out.
Right.
If it comes down to the culture and the understanding of the process and what that process is trying to do, with those tests, you're trying to look for specific failure modes. You're trying to test for certain things and so on and so forth. It's not a check the box exercise. The same goes with management of change. What are we trying to accomplish with the management of change? To prevent unnecessary risks, to make sure the documentation is updated accordingly. So if a maintenance guy goes out to do a repair, he actually has up-to-date drawings and those basic things, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what we're trying to accomplish. And I think if the culture isn't mature enough to understand that, that's where it becomes a tick-the-box exercise.
Well, I think a piece that helps to create a good culture around that is to actually close the loop, is to get the feedback. You know, a change proposal often comes with some justification. This is to fix this problem or this delay or improve performance or, you know, to whatever security update or whatever it is. Well, what's the plan to actually make sure it works? And where's the report? Where's the evidence that the previous changes we made actually fixed something and didn't cause other problems? I've run into very, very few organizations that actually do that follow-on. And it's back to that plan, do, check, act, right? Is let's try it, let's measure it, let's make sure it really works, and then execute and implement the full change. We're pretty quick to, well, let's change it. It all makes sense. We all nod our head and we change it and then forget about it. And I think getting the evidence that the previous types of changes, the things that we're doing, the things that we're making assumptions about actually work and show a benefit, takes a lot of discipline to make work, to make happen in an organization. But it gives you that, oh, it's, if I just approve this thing, I'll never hear about it again, right? Or I'm not going to approve it unless I know that have some confidence that the claims of what it's trying to achieve will actually occur. And later we'll have evidence that it actually occurred. And so it's one more thing to go into an organization. I think it really helps the culture when that level of information and data driven decisions is there, yet it's very hard to actually do.
Yes. Oh, it's not easy. That's configuration management. And that is a discipline unto itself.
I think your opening line though, is that there's a lot of change happening and it will continue to happen. And I'll have to argue with you on that we're getting more or less updates than we used to. I think the internet just made smaller, easier updates quicker. Unfortunately, you're in the wrong operating system. I'm saying smugly as a Mac operator, that, you know, it takes 20 minutes for a reboot and some updates take 3 or 4 reboots to make it work.
This may be the breaking point of converting me to a Mac.
All right. Score another one. There's problems there too. You know, not all software wants to talk to a Mac and all those other things, but that's a subject for another discussion. So for you as the listener, I'm sure at some point in this discussion, you're nodding your head and going, yep, we ran into that. This change management's not easy. So if you've got a story, you know, of a simple little change and an unthought of assumption just brought your organization down or to its knees, we'd love to hear about it. And I'll keep names and details out of it so we can use it in a future episode. Or if you've got some good ideas of how to manage that, how do you draw the line of what needs a quick review and what do you do more due diligence on? How does that system work for you? And if you happen to be using a microphone, unbeknownst to either of us, I told James about my story today with the audio system I use for webinars, and he went off about his microphone being not compatible anymore. Are your microphones working? Is your audio system still talking to your computer? Maybe it's an epidemic and we need to expose that. So let us know. But either way, head over to reliability.fm. You can find Speaking of Reliability and the many episodes there. And you can find James's show, Rooted in Reliability, which is now, what, James, 104, 105 and going strong episodes?
Yes, I believe it was 104 this week has been released. So
okay, well, congratulations on the 100 milestone and many more to you.
Well, thanks, Fred. It's been fun, and you know, continue to have guests such as yourself share your knowledge with the listeners is what makes it successful. So,
all right. Well, appreciate that. As long as our microphones are working, keep that all going. Well, thanks so much, James, and we'll chat with you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. we invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.